Paris, the city awakes to the bells of Notre Dame.
The fisherman fishes,
the baker man bakes,
to the bells of Notre Dame.
To the big bells as loud as the thunder.
Aurora Theatre and Theatrical Outfit unite again. This time, the theatre companies are producing the musical The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I have the director and Aurora Theatre's Associate Artistic Director, Justin Anderson, in studio with me, along with actor David DeVries, who plays Claude Frollo. Welcome.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks
for having us.
Well, I know I've seen you on stage since, David, but I think the last time we spoke may have been when you were playing Freud.
Actually, we spoke last summer when I was directing Smart People for True Colors.
But... actually, that was my bad. But it did lead me to think you've gone through the alphabet F. R-E-U-D, and now you're playing Claude F-R-O-L.
That's true.
So much for that silly, meaningless connection.
Sorry, I didn't mean to spoil your rain on your parade.
Okay. Well,
but one was as an actor, one as a director.
There you go.
So there you go.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Justin and I have talked a lot about the Freudian implications of Frollo and his relationship with Quasimodo. So there is a connection between Freud and Frollo.
Thank you.
You're right on target there.
Let's start talking about this production with a clarification. Is this an adaptation of the Disney movie or the novel by Victor Hugo?
It's both. What the writers did was go back to the film and lift basically the entire score from the film. By Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz. And then they wrote about a dozen new pieces in a variety of iterations for this new stage adaptation. And Peter Parnell was brought on to adapt the libretto from the original novel by Victor Hugo. So they didn't adapt it from the screenplay, which had been adapted from the novel. Mm-hmm. They started fresh with the conceit that the music would be the bridge between the Disney experience and this new theatrical adaptation.
And it debuted in Berlin, not Paris, which might have seemed more logical. Why Germany?
I honestly don't have a very clear answer as to why. I do think there certainly is a deep affinity for the material because of its European roots, in essence. To my knowledge, it's the only Disney theatrical property that's really sort of initially made a splash in Europe before ever having...
Well, I had some colleagues that were in the Stuttgart production of Beauty and the Beast, and the Germans love big, epic musical theater.
And fairy tales
absolutely.
Are quite central
absolutely.
To their folklore.
Yeah, and so when I was working on Beauty and the Beast in the early 2000s, our musical director, Michael Kosrin, was frequently flying back over to Berlin and working on this production, which was a huge hit in Berlin. It was a really big deal. So, I mean, the Germans love their big, epic theater, and this really, thematically and production-wise,
absolutely.
Kind of tapped into that.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about it, and they even referred to it in Wagnerian terms with leitmotifs.
Very much so. It's driven by this idea of fire, to both illuminate, to purify, to potentially harm. So it's very much along those lines of this broad scope of really trying to get into the soul of the human experience.
Hmm. David, you played Claude Frollo, and one of his first acts, that of saving and raising the deformed child, Quasimodo, seems generous, but he takes on a much more sinister role soon enough. Claude Frollo has much more of a backstory and is far more important a character in this stage version than in the Disney movie. How does that contribute to your understanding of his character or the playgoers?
Well, he's a fascinating character to play, and I think that the opening number of the piece really kind of sets him up. And the Disney movie portrays him as a pretty two-dimensional villain, but I think that there's a lot more nuance and ambiguity in this particular take on the story. And so, you know, the challenge is to find the love and the complexity that this man is tortured by, morally, physically, spiritually. And, you know, that's been the fun of it for me.
Quasimodo is deaf from ringing the bells of the cathedral, as if it wasn't enough that the
exactly.
poor kid is deformed. I was wondering, how do you portray this role sensitively?
Sure. I think Hayden Ryder, who plays Quasimodo, has really done a beautiful job of crafting a vocal impediment that I think feels authentic without any degree of insensitivity to any particular disability or community. And what's beautiful about, I think, the approach that we've taken is that when he's in a very dropped-in realistic circumstance with Frollo and others from the outside world, it's a bit more pronounced. It's a bit more of a true impediment.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he is in his own personal life, in his own inner world, where the gargoyles speak to him or he's ruminating on his own thoughts, there's this unleashed freedom in his voice and often in his body. And what I think is so beautifully portrayed is the wish to be able to emanate that in every circumstance, and the hope that that is really who I am inside, even though I might be perceived to a different eye or ear, to have a particular disability or impediment. So to me, I think there's a beautiful contrast that honors the obstacles that he's dealing with in a very honest way, without pushing it to any degree of untruthful behavior.
And at the beginning of the story, you can almost understand Frollo's rationale for isolating Quasimodo.
Yes, yes.
He's trying to protect him from the ridicule of the public. But is he trying to protect himself more?
Well, Justin and I have talked about how Frollo kind of sees Quasimodo as himself, as a part of himself, that part of himself that he loves and loathes, the part that he wishes to keep hidden. You know, it's the id of Frollo's character, and he very much wants to keep that hidden and protected. And of course, when Quasimodo becomes a young man and begins to seek his independence, as any young man would or should, that's when the problems really begin. And his lack of ability to keep that hidden, along with his own desires, and of course, Esmeralda is the catalyst to this kind of the events of the story. And it's interesting to think of it in terms of that metaphor. And in some ways, Quasimodo is the grand metaphor for that in society, which we don't want to deal with. We would like to keep hidden. But what's the true nature of Quasimodo? I mean, there's, as we find out in the story, there's tremendous love and honor and duty and conflict. And so that's what universalizes the particular story in such a beautiful way.
And also makes it feel contemporary. I mean, we're living in an age with greater awareness and a plea for more inclusivity of people who are different. If you're just joining us, this is City Lights on WABE. our guests today are director Justin Anderson and actor David DeVries. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support for WABE comes from Rosie's Roofing and Restoration, committed to keeping you cozy and dry regardless of the weather. Rosie's Roofing and Restoration, there when you need us, online at rosiesroofing.com.
We're back with City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzis here with you, director Justin Anderson and actor David DeVries. We're talking about Aurora Theater and Theatrical Outfits production of The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Many people are familiar with the Disney songs. What music has been added to this production? This is ambitious.
Yes, well, the writers used the framework of the score for the animated cartoon to serve as a launching pad to either unpack themes that were already presented or to find different iterations of thematic material that would help to present particular character struggles or motifs that would need to be, or serve rather, I think, as a narrative framework to help build the momentum of the story. And so you find some additions there. There's probably the most noticeable, the end credits of the cartoon have a tune that has no lyric, and it developed into the song called Someday, which is now in Act Two that Esmeralda sings after she's been captured, spoiler alert, friends, by Frollo. And so it's probably one of the most beautiful additions and bridges from the original source material. Well, I don't want to say original source material, meaning the novel, but from the score in the film to this new stage adaptation. And then there are different, again, iterations of the Bells of Notre Dame that keep coming back as a theme. Frollo has this beautiful, almost lullaby song called Sanctuary that, of course, was in the original movie as well, but it comes back often when he's working to continue either to win over or endear or reconnect or reassert status with Quasimodo. And so it becomes a bit of their sort of love and instructional language in a way. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You referred to it as a lullaby.
A lullaby, yeah, very much so, because it has a power and a potency of its own. Yes, there is a tremendous amount of Latin in the show that you would hear sort of in the distance a bit in the cartoon, but they were not necessarily pronounced songs, and our entire cast is sort of carrying that weight, not only as actors in the role, but basically a congregational choir as well. So those songs have been brought a little bit more to the forefront to really help, I think, shape authenticity of the 15th century, but often it's commenting on the narration as well.
We have two clips we were able to gather from your rehearsal just last night. The first with David as Frollo. Let's hear Hellfire.
Such a sweet song.
Such a beautiful voice, David.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, and you've put in your share of song and dance with touring Broadway hits.
I have. It's been an unlikely circumstance, but yes, I found myself in several big musicals, and coincidentally, the two big musicals that I have done, in major tours and things like that have been composed by Alan Menken, who wrote the the score for Beauty and the Beast, and Stephen Schwartz, who wrote the score for Wicked, which I did for 3 years. So it's an interesting marriage of those two kind of titans of musical theater. So based on that alone, it's worth a listen, because the music is extraordinary. And I have to say that, the play has a very interesting series of endings, and but it works very cumulatively, and I find myself very emotionally kind of completed by the end of the story.
Yeah, I was hoping we could touch upon that in just the few minutes we have left. The Disney movie changed several plot lines from the book, and I don't know if you want to give away any spoilers, but this production has sexual assault and a whole lot more death.
Yes, yes.
Do you prefer one ending to the other?
Well, I think this is certainly more authentic to the human experience. There is nothing glorious, I think, about the way that these circumstances end. And yet there still is a kernel of hope that, I refer back to the song Someday, our hope and prayers, humanity, is that we will figure out a way to get past our differences and work out this issue with the other and stop letting that become this cyclical, divisive, point of contention for century upon century upon century.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that Mencken and Schwartz were putting this together right at the turn of the millennium.
Right,
they were working
right.
In the late 90s and the early 2000s. And so there's very much, you can hear it in the score, in the lyrics. There's this kind of sense of the great wheel of time making a big turn here. And can we really reframe the way we interact with one another?
One would hope.
Yeah.
I've been speaking with actor David DeVries and Aurora Theater's Associate Artistic Director Justin Anderson. The Hunchback of Notre Dame is a co-production of Aurora Theater and Theatrical Outfit. It opens this Thursday, that's tomorrow, at Aurora, and runs through August 27th. Then you're headed downtown. The show runs at Theatrical Outfit from September 7th through the 17th. Justin, David, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Lois. Our pleasure.